guys, thank you for tuning in. One of our first episodes, Can't believe it. I say our first episode. We've done a whole lot of back and forth, man. Even before we even got on this mic, I felt like we had done 10, and then we've done some hours of recording. But, you know, it's one of those things where nothing's ever really perfect, but, you know, you can always make things better. So I thank you guys for pushing me to do that. So this is the intro, and this is kind of how we like to start the podcast. Maybe it'll change, but for now on, we kind of like this. So my name is Laith Harlow.
I'm Tristan Harlow.
And this is Relative Nonsense. Awesome. So first take, we've done that 50 million times too. Relative Nonsense, just like it sounds, we are two cousins, love each other to death, always talking a whole bunch of nonsense. So we decided we get on a podcast and share this with our family, our friends, and hopefully just meet a lot more people who are just like us in life, man. A little background about me. My name is Laith Harlow, born and raised in Tallahassee, Florida. Ex-college football player. Didn't really play any college football, injury before that. Got into line work because my whole family builds power lines, man. Found a beautiful woman that I ended up marrying, have two kids with her. Back injuries kept me out of line work too. Ended up now by trade, thank the good Lord, I found sales and have done pretty well in it, man.
My name is Tristan Harlow. I'm 25. I got a wife and two babies as well. Went through school, got into line work as a trade too, kind of like the family profession. Kind of transitioned more into like the office-y type setting there, but that's what I'm currently doing in this. So.
Office-y type setting, I like that. So you're still in line work, and for those of you who don't know, line work is tough work, but you say office-y. So in the trade, we call that freon poisoning. Basically just means you're getting all the AC you can, man. So from Tallahassee, Florida too, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep, from Tallahassee, Florida, born and raised.
Born and raised, that's what I'm talking about. So is your whole family from here? I know me and you are. What about all of the rest of our family pretty much from here?
I mean, I don't think Tallahassee's big enough to contain all of our family. We have a massive outreach of cousins and siblings. And well, I don't have any siblings. I'm an only child, but, you know, everybody else does, I think.
Spoiled.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, cousins, aunts, and uncles, I'll be honest with you, I don't even know all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, isn't it funny? I remember the same thing, man. We're older now, so we do a lot of stuff with our family, but not as many family as we used to be around growing up. I feel like we should get back to that. Hopefully this helps that a little bit too. But I remember every single family reunion we went to, I could never name the people who came. Like, I felt like I knew everybody. The next year we would come and there'd be 15 more people. And I was like, there's no way. Y'all are just adding people that aren't really family. But turn out, that was really all our family. Like, oh no, I grew up with your cousin, aunt. It's funny how that country line comes down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. I mean, you know, our grandfather, he bought like a whole 10 acres just to have a family reunion spot.
Isn't that awesome?
It was crazy. He had to have enough parking, you know, and it was still ran out of parking most days.
Yeah, still ran out of parking. I remember it was all in that gated area, and like it would get so full if you didn't get there early enough. You had to park out by the road. And this wasn't just like a road like we're in a neighborhood. This is a highway. People are running 65, 75 down this road. You know what I mean? And we're out here just trying to get to be with our family. Doesn't matter where we got to park or if we're running across the road, semis blazing past us, we going over there to play some volleyball, man. You know what I mean? So childhood, what was it like for you?
Only child. You know, of course, greatest thing. My mother's favorite child, to be honest with you.
Favorite?
Favorite, absolutely.
Damn, that's
not
awesome.
Not even a close comparison.
I'm definitely second.
My sperm donor is what I like to call him. I don't know if he was there for maybe a month or two, something like that. Anyways, he kind of dipped out.
Yeah.
My mom remarried to the man that I call my father today. They got a divorce when I don't know, I was like 10 or 11 or somewhere around in there, but we still keep in touch. You know, my baby still call him old Papa D.
That's right.
So,
Papa D.
Yeah. So much respect for and love for that man there.
Absolutely. Great guy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, if you're going through life and, you know, your dad stepped out or whatever, there's plenty of father figures. You just got to look around. You know, it might be a brother, uncle, or damn guy you work with, whatever, old grouchy bastard. But,
that's right.
You know, they're everywhere. And like I said, we had a, you know, mutual grandfather. He was a real big part in my life. And you know, I got some grandfathers from mama's side or my, you know, all that too. So there's plenty of father figures growing up. There's plenty to learn. You know, we kind of grew up, like I say, in the Tallahassee. It's more on the outskirts. So there was always some kind of more of a country southern lifestyle.
Absolutely.
A lot of hours logged bush hogging on a tractor. You know what I mean?
And I feel like Tallahassee itself is pretty damn country. You know, when you hear we're from Florida, people think of Florida as like, oh, we're down at this beach where everybody's tan and burned. Yeah, we near beaches and we're tanned and burned, but our burn's a little bit different, right? Like, we got the burn around the neck, and we call it the farmer's tan, what we got. We are Tallahassee, Florida, but we are South Georgia from everybody who's from Florida would call us up here in the panhandle, right?
Oh, yeah, so we're from the panhandle. Like, you know, you listening in Florida, oh, beaches in Miami, no, that's more like palmetto bushes and damn pine trees. That's we right. ain't got no much beaches. That's about an hour and a half away.
Yeah, I ain't going to lie to you. My favorite beach is the river, son.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, sir. So growing up, only child, awesome. Like you said, didn't have a father. Same here. We'll get into that later. But still found father figures everywhere. Just a huge support. And one of the huge reasons, right, size of our family, dude. We got 400 or 500 people. So just that right there is like enough to keep you going. And there was tough times growing up for sure, like there is for everybody. How did your career life go? You said went to school, blah blah blah. I want to know all the blah blah blahs. Let's start with school. What happened there?
So I went to school pretty typical.
Was it?
Well, up until ninth grade. So I done ninth grade in a traditional high school. Our shared grandfather, he ended up getting sick, so I was traveling around a lot from the hospitals. He was in the Army, so it was a lot of VAs. We was VA here in town or the one in Gainesville. So, you Shands. Know. Yeah, it was right across the street from Shands
okay.
at the
okay.
VA. So he'd be there for weeks to months at a time, missing a lot of school. So my mama, she decided I would do virtual school, and there was this new school that just came out. It's called Leon County Virtual School. In Tallahassee, we got, was it 4 or 5 high schools?
Yeah.
One of them is called a alternative high school. So it's like for the kids who wasn't like socially acceptable at normal high school. Mm-hmm. They went to this special high school, whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
we know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah.
I've rode past it a time or two. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just don't press the brakes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah,
just
a little different. I'm sure they're good folks and all. You
That's
know,
right.
They just might not see the world as most people see the world.
That's right.
And this Leon County Virtual School, it was made for the kids who couldn't make it at the alternative high school.
And that's where you wound up, not because that's who you were, but because of the situation that was brought upon you, right?
Football. No, it wasn't like I couldn't make it in high school. It was just, it was all online. I never had to go in. So
right.
That's kind of a big school is LCVS or whatever, Florida Virtual School, I think is what mm-hmm. it's called.
Yeah. Leon County
FLVS or something like that.
Yeah.
This is essentially the same thing, just for the county instead of the statewide. You got like local teachers you go see if you needed to, and that kind of thing. So got in there. I was traveling around for a little bit. You know, our whole family does line work. So that was pretty much my plan in life, was like, you know, I get through school, I get into line work, and then I start making money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there it is. Got it planned out.
Yeah, exactly. So we was doing the schoolwork online. I hated school. My mama put a huge emphasis on it. It was A's or B's. A C was a fail. Mm-hmm. So it was very high expectations. I was kind of getting tired of it. I went in. A little backstory about the school. Like, whenever we started, I was like one of the first classes. There was like 6 of us, you know, in the whole entire program.
Yeah.
Well, you know, these kids that wasn't necessarily making it in regular school, they didn't necessarily have the best grades. You know, I came over like a 4-point, you know, something weighted GPA from AP classes. So I brought the school average like way up.
Yeah, F to a B type deal.
Man. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Our savior has entered.
Oh, they were ecstatic. You know, I think my English teacher gave me his personal phone number. He's like, call me anytime you need me. You know, I'll be there. So, you know, I'd done that for like a little bit, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I looked online to the line school apprenticeship. Said all I needed was a GED. I was like, fuck, I can get a GED, you know.
Hey, man, right now.
Yeah, I think I'm pass this right now. I'll be done with this. So I went in school, and I was like, hey, I'm going to drop out. They're like, no, you're not. I was like, I think I am. I'm going to get a GED. And they're like, you can't do that. I'm pretty sure I can pass the test.
Yeah.
Well, little did I know about the whole grade point average thing and all, bringing the school's average up. If I dropped out, they wouldn't get to keep my average. if I completed the program, they could log it as theirs. Like, they basically made me get that 4 point something.
Right.
So they wanted that statistic. So they put me in this accelerated program. It was basically, I didn't have to take any electives. All it took was all my core classes. So like, your, you know, was it English, math, science? I don't know. I'm not that smart anymore, so I don't really kind of forgot.
Yeah, PE.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, type really fast on this computer.
Yeah.
You know, get your laps in.
Yeah, it's funny because back then you'd never think you'd need that. And then today, like, that's all you do is computers and phones and how life has changed. But so basically they talked you into staying there so that they could say that they helped you get that beautiful GPA that you ended up graduating with.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They was like, hey, if you stay here, you know, you can work at your own pace.
Yeah.
Da, 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 da. But I was like, okay, cool. So I completed, long story short, I completed everything in the first semester, the rest of my high school.
Done.
Yeah, so I was done.
How old
halfway
were you?
Through 10th. I was 15, 14, 15 at the
time. So you didn't even have, did you have a permit to drive? Not even a driver's license, but a driver's permit at this point.
I did have a permit.
So you were 15.
Yeah, I was 15. I do remember I did have a permit, but I couldn't drive. When I wanted to go take my finals, like, I was done with everything, my standardized testing for the state.
Yeah.
Remember, my mom had to drive, and she had to get up super early, and she was mad about that. And then she had to wait in the parking lot for 3 hours while I went and took this test. You know,
and so clearly she passed, of course.
Oh, yeah. She was super ecstatic about that.
Oh, I'm sure she was.
Yeah.
You know what's hilarious, man? Like, it's hard to fathom. I don't even think most people can realize this. Most people, especially if you were born late, like, I was born September 10th. So usually, at least in Florida, Tallahassee, how it starts is if you're born after a certain era or time in the year, you start the following year, right? So I was a year older than most people in my class. I ended up skipping a grade, but neither here nor there on that end. The major point of that, right, is that I was 16 in ninth grade. Maybe I was just getting into 10th grade, but like, I knew that I was driving off campus every single day to go to lunch, and I still had 3 years to go. Here you are, can't even drive, and you're done with high school. And like, your next step is line work, which is awesome, but you're 15, and you cannot start line work until you're 18. So there's a three-year gap here that you hadn't accounted for yet, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My game plan was to get done with school. That's all I cared about.
Right.
Get done with school, get mom off my back. I'll figure the rest out later.
I like that.
But, yeah, so I am, 15, can't drive, and have nothing new during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get a job because I can't drive to my job, and most people don't hire 15-year-olds.
That's right.
So I finally turned 16. In Florida, they have to pay for you to go to school for your entire time. So if you're supposed to be in school for 12 years or 13, including kindergarten, whatever, they have to provide you with schooling. So it doesn't matter if you get done early. They just have to pay for you to go to college. Mom's like, well, you're going to college. I'm like, no, I'm not.
Why do you think I finished high school at 15?
Right. The whole reason I want to be done is so I didn't have to do anything else. I want to be done.
That's right.
I'm not going to damn college for 2 or 4 years.
I'm a lineman, mama.
Yeah, absolutely not. So our compromise was some trade school. I went to trade school to, aviation mechanics. Didn't really pan out. Wasn't my type of thing, you know. So I'd done that until I turned 16. Turned 16, I got a truck, and then I started working full-time. Done gutters for a little bit, done some little odds and ends. And then I got hooked up with an electrical company here in town. Worked there for like 2 years until I turned 18. Thought I was hot shit, man, I'll tell you what. I was 18 or 16, had a full-time job, didn't have to go to school. My buddy's working part-time, making minimum wage. I was making like $10 an hour. I was killing it, dude.
Killing it.
Not spending
any of your money except on gas and insurance, probably.
Oh, man, I bought everything I ever wanted, you know?
That's right.
I was probably only a 16-year-old who paid for his Netflix account.
That's crazy. I'm 30 and don't pay for mine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, mama. Nah, so so then you're 16, you making all this damn money, as you think at 16,
yeah,
right,
exactly.
Which is $10 an hour. And then now you're 18, and it's time to get into line work.
Yep. So
what is the – and for y'all who don't know, line work is like you were getting allowance your whole life, and then you got a real job. So you went from getting $5 a week, and then you got your first $400 paycheck, except this is – you were making $400 paychecks, and now you're about to get a $4,000 paycheck. It doesn't seem realistic until you do it. What was that like? What was the, did you know it was going to be that crazy? Like, of course we always talk about the big money, but did you see it being that big of money?
No, absolutely not. I didn't know like exactly dollar amounts. So, you know, our whole family does it. Didn't really talk money, like exact money. Mm-hmm. All I knew was, you know, your older brother, Justin, he sat me down one day. He's like, what do you want to do in life? And I was like, well, I don't really know. He's like, are you going to make a bunch of money? I was like, absolutely. I mean, who says no? You know
right, mean? Yeah. I'd rather be broke.
Right. He's like, well, do you want to go to school for, you know, 8-10 years or whatever and take out $100,000 student loan, make as much as a doctor does? And I was like, well, the doctor making the much, you know, that sounds great, but the whole school loans, I don't know. He's like, well, then you better get your ass in line work.
Yes, sir.
Yep, absolutely. So that was the game plan. He told me that. I was like, well, I know what I'm doing now. I'm one of them linesmen.
That's right, one of them linesmen, baby. So what was your introduction to line work? How did it start?
So I turned 18 on a Sunday. I drove down for my first job, started Monday morning. Dude, I was lost in the sauce, man. I've never left the house like that. Now I'm 18 years old, got a vehicle, and I'm working like Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You know, I've never been south
way
of Orlando.
Away from the house.
Yeah. On like a family trip. So this is crazy to me. Very naive. Don't know anything in the world. You know what I mean? Like, I'm staying at hotel rooms. I don't even know how to book a hotel room. But
we can thank Justin for that one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. first week was like prep because Hurricane Irma is rolling in at this time. So I don't know if it was a week or two. It was something like that. Irma was about to hit. That was everybody was talking about. It was like, I'm trying to learn. Like, man, there's a hurricane about to hit. Now I didn't really know what that meant. You know what I mean? Like, okay, yeah, it's Florida. We got hurricanes all the damn time.
Yeah,
who
right.
Cares?
About like, three a year, matter of fact.
I'm thinking like, damn, dude, I'm just starting. I'm going to take some days off. This is going to be some BS, you know. Have a, you know, small check this week. Hurricane Irma hits. And for those who don't know, if you get in line work in your own storm, usually you work 7 days a week, 16-hour days.
Yeah, usually. And what he means by usually is not sometimes you work less. Sometimes your ass don't get off the clock. And I know that sounds crazy to people, but we have all these hotels that are supposed to be set up for us to go stay at and everything when we get down there. The planners do this. But there's so much chaos going on at one time. You got to think about it. Like, yeah, they're kind of worried about getting us to sleep, but they're also worried about the 2 million people that do not have power right now and how many places do we not have access to roads, and are people in the homes okay? There's so much more going on at the time than us being able to sleep. So a lot of nights, the first few nights, first few weeks, depending on how bad the storm is, you're not at a hotel, bud. You're sleeping in a truck, and you better hope you got the gas to keep that truck on at night. So you're getting paid around the clock to do that, because essentially, I know it's like, oh, you're still sleeping, you're not working, but you get no sleep at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, those not familiar, you know, if you've ever had a storm in your area and like storm blows by, whatever, you're out riding around, you see a bunch of trucks sitting in a parking lot, you know, nobody's doing nothing. You're like, man, why are these guys working? Well, a lot of times, you know, either we've drove 20, 18, 10, 5, 6 hours away to get there.
Nonstop.
You drive all the way through. Yep. You finally get there. Well, we can't just go to work. We don't know what the system is. We don't even know what's broke. The power company doesn't even know what broke yet. So they have to send their guys out in the field. They have to learn what's broke. They have to learn everything and then start sending us to work. So if you ever see guys sitting in a parking lot, don't get mad at them. You know, like, it's not like they're like, oh, no, we ain't working here. You know, those guys, they get sent home. Them guys are here
absolutely.
To work.
And they want to work. They're absolutely. Actively looking for work too. But just like you said, like right there, they're driving who knows how long, man. And then not only that, like to add on to that too, like, when guys are like in a restaurant and they're getting food, and I've seen videos where these guys are turning around like, why aren't you working? You don't know how long that guy was working before. That guy could have, it might be 2 o'clock in the afternoon to you, but that guy could just be getting off, because we don't work on, like, a 16 is not from this time to this time. There's 24 hours a day people are working. So some are days, some are nights. They're going to blend in together where most of the load is going to get done during your middle of your days and things like that. But these guys are on and off at different times. So even though they're getting some food and they're not working and they're just chilling in a parking lot, doesn't mean they're doing anything. And not to mention, like, I know a lot of people know what power lines are, but I don't really think they understand the danger of power lines. Like, if you have two guys who are working in the same area, even if they can't see each other, they could be 5 miles apart, but they're working in the same area. They're working on what's called the same line, right? So they're working basically they are in the same line as each other. They just can't see each other because there's a turn around a curve or how long this thing is. And if one guy is working on it and another guy's working on it and the power company who hires everybody to come help them doesn't talk to each other, this guy could turn the electricity on while the guy down there is getting killed by it and has no idea. So there are so many things that go into purpose and planning so that you don't have a bunch of dead guys on the storm. Everybody goes back home to their families that they left to come and help everybody who doesn't have power.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. It's super dangerous. It's a dangerous trade to begin with, but storm is definitely, like, got to be on your toes.
Absolutely.
You know, tons of hazards out there, not even other contractors or people in the public. I mean, huge ones, generators, backfeeding the line, you know. You could be trying to turn on a house, and the house be killing you. You know, it's crazy. Right. But, it's honestly the best way to describe it is one big clusterfuck.
Yeah.
You know, you just had a huge storm come through and wreck your entire city. You know, so they're trying to reboot and redo everything at the same time.
I'll tell you the first thing that I learned in line work for storm, rather, because it's funny, your introduction, craziest part of line work. Usually it's all crazy, right? You're climbing 120-foot poles. You're fucking working on things that if you touch it wrong could blow you apart. Everything in line work is a theory, right? Not a fact. And it's all a theory because it's not 100% true. You could do the same thing 100,000 times, and on 100,001, it kill you. It's a theory 100% of the time. So the first thing he told me about storm work was chaos equals money. So it's a clusterfuck, just like you said. Yes, but man, and you don't realize it when you first start, because to you it's just like, what the hell is happening? You're so caught up in trying to get the little sleep that you can and trying to eat when you can and trying to do as much work as you can to help these people. Because it's not like while we're working, we don't see anybody else. There's all of these residents and everybody who are outside trying to give you food and water. And thank you so much for being here in their area. So you're doing everything that you can for them too. But now it's a week into it and you're still out there and that first check hits, right? And everybody, just so y'all know, by 7 days into anything of doing it 24 hours a day, I'd imagine special ops, military, anything like that, your body and your mind kind of wants to quit at that point. So you have to have a little bit of motivation and line work. The cash is definitely that motivation, baby, along with the crews and the people, of course. But, you know, the cash is what keeps your family happy when they're not seeing you too. So what was the first check like? How much was the first? Explain, baby.
Yeah, my first storm check, I don't know the exact dollar amount. It was $3,800 or $3,900. And that was bring home. That's net. That's not gross.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, so you take an 18-year-old kid. I've made $325 after taxes was my bring home at my electrical job. Made that for 2 years. Thought I was hot shit.
Amen.
And then that $3,800, and you couldn't tell me anything. Couldn't tell me nothing, man. I swear we were on that storm for 4 weeks. You know, I stacked up a huge amount of money. The first thing I did, and bought a side-by-side.
That's right.
Right after that, bought a brand-new truck. You know, I come home after the storm, you know, and we were back to regular work. My buddy's dad's, they'd be like, hey, man, don't be spending all your money now. You need to save your money. You know, trust me. And I'm like, dude, I make more than you do. Shut up. You know, like, you can't tell me.
That's right.
You know, but I should have listened.
They're right.
Should have listened. Hey, I had a fun time, but I make bad financial decisions.
Amen, you know what I mean? Baby. And, you know, when you have a really fun time, it usually ain't for a really long time either. I had to learn that the hard way, too. Hell, I guess I'm still learning that the hard way. You know what I mean? I do. We grew up without things in life as far as materialistic. So I do like to spoil my wife and kids and myself whenever you get the chance, of course, you know. But that's not what you really need in life. You know what I mean? Even though it is a whole lot of fun. And I've always been told that, you know, when you spend a lot of money like that, it keeps you having a great work ethic because you know you got to be right back there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You got no choice.
Yeah, you're going to make it or you ain't, you know. So
right.
Might as well make it because you got, you know, Bank of America. They knocking on your door, son. You better pay them, folks.
That's right. That's right. Now, this is rough work. This is rough work, and that's week one. How long were you on the storm? And then are you still in line work? And then in what aspect are you in line work? You're in the Freon poisoning side, as we said in the beginning of this thing. So how'd you get to that?
Yeah, so that first storm was 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks. And with that, now, you know, we've hit every major storm in between now and then.
Yeah.
Or then and now, I should say. But
that's right.
I don't know. I've been in the trade since you know, day one of 18. I'm 25 now, about to be 26 in about a month. Actually, no, about 9 days. That's crazy.
9 days. Yeah, look at that. So over 8 years.
Yeah, almost 8 years. Coming up on 8 years. About 2 years ago, I transitioned into more of an office type role. Now I do safety and training at a company, at a contractor. So pretty much what that entails, I ride around to the crews, see if they're doing their safety objects right. Because like I said, this is a very dangerous job. Absolutely. There's a lot of things go into it. Not even the electrical side of it. Like, yeah, that's huge. It's super dangerous.
Sure.
And then you wrap everything else we do around it, and everything else kill you just as fast, too.
It's funny, like, what kills you in electrical work, usually the least percentage is electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? And that's when you're out there, you kind of have to have everything. Everybody says keep your head on a swivel, man, because it's not, you're so focused on this wire that can kill you. You're not thinking about the 50 million other things that are going on at the same exact time that are doing the same exact thing. You know what I mean? And it is very dangerous. So, you know, thank all the linemen out there. Thank all the safety guys too. You know what I mean? As much shit in line work as they talk about the safety guys, everybody knows, you know, it takes everybody to make that thing go around like it does, you know. And at the end of the day, look at life, bro. Who really right now, if the whole grid went down and there was absolutely no electricity left, how many of us can survive? You're talking about no real purified drinking water, right? So when you drink regular water, you're going to get sick. No way to cook your food. No way to keep yourself cool or keep yourself warm or keep yourself. So it's such a vital part of what we do every single day. And I think not enough people know about it. You know what I mean? Like, people know that it's got to get done, you know. But when I was 5 years old and I walked into a room, I knew that if I clicked that button, the light turned on. It's kind of the same deal, right? So I think the more people that know about it and are intrigued by it and want to try it out, we're not here to say it's for everybody by any means. This is a wild and hard-ass lifestyle, baby. You better get with the program and know that this is something that you want to do, because it can get you killed a million ways a Sunday. It's trying to kill you. You know what I mean? Absolutely. But it's great, and we need it, and we definitely need more of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like you said, it's not for everybody. It's definitely some lucrative opportunities, but it's also, you know, I'm married. I got two kids. It's pretty hard on your family, man. Contracting, you know, I'll be honest, you don't get to pick where job's at. You know, they say, hey, you show up here Monday, and you know, you got some random number you've never met, and you send you an address, and that's where you go.
That's right.
Be there at 7 a.m. You know, that might be down the road from your house. That might be across the country. You don't know. So that's kind of hard. You know, most of the time where I'm local too, not a lot of work for my contractors. So it'd be 8-9 hours away from the house most days. You know, we bought a camper, me and wife, making the most of it. We got pregnant. Don't know how that happened. But we brought in our
fornication.
Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. I stick to the big A, you know.
Absence. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, that one. But it's hard, man, on the wife and kids. So
for sure.
Transitioning now, though, I do get to spend a lot more time with them, so it is a lot easier on us.
And that's awesome. And that, you know, that's the reason we're sitting here doing this thing today, because I can tell you right now, I'm not in line work either anymore. But if either one of us were, this isn't a thing. As a matter of fact, Justin was just here with us a couple of days ago. He's still a lineman, of course, and he was with his camper traveling to Arkansas, taking his next job. And that's just kind of how it is. You know what I mean? You're always on the road, and you have to fall in love with that aspect of it. And, you know, once it gets to the family portion of it, save your money in anything that you do so that you always have more opportunities. And baby, it's 2025 now. You know, there is definitely a need for linemen, and we need as many that want to be out there. But you can do any damn thing you want nowadays and make a career out of it. So just be passionate about what the hell you do.
Yeah,
so,
you definitely, you touched on the passion. If you ain't got passion for it, you're probably not going to make it.
That's right. With
you. It's hard.
Yeah, because the money is great. The money is great, but the money is not going to keep you in it. It has to be a whole lot more than that.
No, I mean, I always heard, you know, older people tell you, man, money ain't everything. I'm like, psh, you ain't got none. That's, you know, you know, I can't be crying, but if I am, I'd rather hit the seats of a Bugatti than a Camry.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It really is not everything. It really does put perspective in your life.
It sure does. Yeah, it absolutely does. I agree with that. Well, man, is there anything else that you want to add that I might have missed
Nah, man, I basically sums it up. I guess we can kind of jump into you, you know, where you started, where you from, where you been.
Sure. Well, it all started right here in Tallahassee, Florida, where I'm born and raised. I say born and raised. I lived here until probably around 10. I was going into the fourth grade, and I moved out to Alaska with my uncle and aunt. And what a wild year that was, man. Just a really, really great experience seeing something new and being that young and going that far away. Crazy. My first ever plane trip I went on completely by myself. Didn't know what the hell I was doing. Now, I could act big and bad on here and be like, and I walked to the different terminals. No, that's not how it worked. We live in Tallahassee, like I said. So clearly in Tallahassee, right, there's not any huge international airports. So.
No, it's a pretty small. We are international now.
We are. We getting there, baby. Yeah, we getting there. Yeah, well, back then, you know, I'm an old guy now. Back then, it wasn't all, it wasn't how it is. You know, transportation was a little bit different, more expensive. So the closest that we could go to even get a flight that ended up in Alaska was Atlanta. So mom drove me to Atlanta.
So what a... Let me stop you there. Please. I know Alaska. What stemmed moving to Alaska?
Well, I wasn't always the best kid. And I, a lot like you, grew up without a father. So I didn't have a dad. There was no real structure. My mom was trying to give me structure. I'm not saying there was no real structure from her. She was trying to. I was just being rebellious. So
yeah, absolutely,
there was an opportunity for me to go out there, and she didn't say you were going. She said, "Your aunt and uncle, and I had two cousins as well. They live out here in Anchorage, Alaska. Would you like to go and experience that with them for a year?" And I said, "Absolutely," without even thinking about it. You know, that being that young, still just let me go. Right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Free as a bird.
Yeah, young, you know, you could ask if we want to go anywhere. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, so hardships in life, just like always goes in life. And thank God for the opportunity, man, because how beautiful that place was. Such a crazy experience. When I moved, it was around my birthday, so it was getting near winter. I'd never seen snow either. It was getting near winter. We get up there, and I'm not a very in shape kid at this point in my life. You know, I had found a severe love for McDonald's. and we are probably 100 foot away from the door from where we parked at. And my cousin.
At the airport in Alaska, are you saying?
Well, no, when we get back to the house from the airport in Alaska, to their house on base. He's in the Air Force, was in the Air Force. So thank you, all you servicemen, for all your service. We get back on base. We get to the house. We're about 100 foot from where we parked to the door, right? And he's like, race your cousin to the door. And I'm not thinking anything about it. We're the same age. So I'm thinking like, oh, yeah, here we go. And I'm running with all my might. And I beat him. And I'm like, man, I'm good. I realize at the same time that I'm about to die because I cannot breathe. I mean, I'm literally like as hard as I'm trying to catch my breath, I cannot breathe. And they are laughing to death at me. And I'm like, I don't know if you guys know, this ain't funny. And they were like, just so you know, in Alaska, because of the elevation, the air is a lot thinner up here. So you run out of breath a lot quicker. It does. You do get used to it quickly. And I would say a lot of people, I mean, you look at people now, they work out with these damn masks on their face that do the same thing. They take you to a higher elevation. So it's a lot better for you. But awesome experience.
How was, walk me through. I mean, I went up to Northern States. It's cold, you know. So how was it from going, you know, from a Florida summer transition into Alaska winter?
Freezing, actually.
Literally.
Literally. way below that, you know. So how it started out, it was, like I said, when I went up there around my birthday. So this probably less than a month later. I mean, and it's already, I wake up one morning, and I don't know why I woke up, but it's still dark outside like it was most of the time because it's winter in Alaska. You had about, people say it was dark 24/7. You get about 3 to 5 hours of daylight. But it's dark, and I'm looking and I'm seeing these things. It looks like it's raining. I'm like, oh, it's going to be a nasty day. And then I look down and all I can see is white as far as the eye can see. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I woke up my cousin. I'm freaking out. And he's like, yeah, it's snowing. And went back to bed. I'm losing it. You know,
right. So the first time you see snow, right?
First time I seen snow. Yeah. So I run downstairs, I run outside. I'm in like probably some shorts, not a good idea. I'm not thinking at all at this point. About froze to death in 2 seconds trying to get back inside. And like I said, I don't know, that was probably 3 or 4 in the morning, and woke up probably 5 hours later to get ready for school. And they were like, we're snowed in. So that was my first introduction. We get snowed in. School's canceled. This is crazy. I'm from Florida. You don't ever, school's canceled because of hurricanes and you're going to die. School's not canceled because of a bunch of snow and you can stay in and play. And if you can crawl your way out the door, you can play King of the Hill on a snow mountain. Like,
yeah, like, this is awesome, dude.
This is awesome. Yeah, right?
First time I've ever seen snow. I want to play awesome. It. I got to go to school. Now you tell me we don't do school, so I can play in it. Yes. This is awesome.
But it was freezing. And I'll tell you, as a kid, this is so long ago, I don't really remember like the cold. Like, people go, how cold was it? But I'll always remember this one time, and this kind of just gives you an insight of how cold it is. We always walked to school. That's how it worked. Everybody worked, so we had to walk to school. And it was all on base, so it's safe. It's not 2025. Things are so crazy now. My kids ain't walking to school neither. But back then, we walked to school every single day. So first off, you're walking to school, and there's just moose on the side of the road. Huge moose, right? And you ain't going up to pet it or nothing like that. You kind of stay out of its way. But they just kind of do their own thing. Another cool part about living in the snow, man, you would find these icicles that were like 6 foot long. And they'd be dangling on the sides of houses. So as you were walking, you would just always be looking for the best icicle to like sword fight with. And then like you get thirsty because you're running around playing. So you could eat half of it and it turned into water for you on the way. Very resourceful, Alaska. So yeah, that was great. But like I said, we walked to school and back to school. And this is about 6 months into me living there. It is real cold now. I mean, brutal. It's negative 20, negative 30 when you're waking up. I was playing basketball. Well, it was a little late when this basketball tournament was going to be done. So we had all agreed that, hey, you can do the basketball tournament. You just got to walk back to the house. No worries. Well, it was kind of a blizzard at this point. Now, there wasn't a ton of snow, but I mean, it was probably 40 mile an hour winds. And by the time I got back home, I was sick for about 2 days. Now, I could have called and said something or anything like that, but I'm hard-headed, so I was like, I'm a walk. They told me I'm a walk. I'm a walk this thing. And I just played a whole tournament. I'm talking about 4 or 5 basketball games in a row, and we won the tournament, so that means, like, great, we won. But aside from that, we're in every game without a break. It's back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back. Like I said, it was a long walk home for sure. That was where I found out what the cold really was. But once again, it was still a great experience, man. The first time I'd ever seen the Northern Lights in my life, and as a kid, it was breathtaking. And I mean absolutely breathtaking, life-changing, still a part of my life today. I mean that, and learning how to snowboard and, you know, just all the cool things of life. Then, you know, you fast forward a year and you miss a mama and, you know, call to go back home. And it's like, yeah.
So. Okay, so, you know, had some great experiences that you can't get in Florida, which is awesome as a kid.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
So you transition, you come back home. What was your more like your later years in like school or life? How are you trying to figure out what you're going to do in life?
Yeah, so just like I told you, I was a big, big kid. So before ever going to Alaska, what I always wanted to do as a kid, I have got a picture when I was like 3 years old, my long curly hair, and I've got this helmet on. I already got the mouthpiece in. Like, I got this thing dialed in, and I don't even know what I'm doing yet. You know what right. I mean? So you could tell, like, that's what I wanted to do. Well, I'm huge. And
football.
How'd you know?
Okay,
oh, helmet mouthpiece. I was getting there. It cut me off. So, no, I'm just kidding. Turns out back then, they didn't realize what America was doing to the food systems these days, putting all these hormones in there for huge, gigantic kids. That wasn't a thing back then. Like, it was like, everybody should be this skinny all the time. So I was way over the weight limit for my age group. So when I was about 8 or 9, they told my mom that I should be with the 14-year-olds for my weight. And my mom said, y'all are crazy trying to put almost high school kids with my kid who's never played a down of football in his life. Ain't no way. And they said, well, we wouldn't let you do that anyways. That's just how heavy your kid is. Basically, we're saying no without telling you no. You know what I mean? So I could not play my first down of football until I was in 7th grade. A couple years after coming back, that's kind of what I found. We grew up predominantly black neighborhoods. So football, basketball was very big things. Sports were very big things, and I was always into sports. I love baseball. A lot of my good friends played baseball back then, got a lot of friends I went to school with that are in the MLB and things like that too. So my first love ever was actually baseball prior to that. Then my brother kind of, Justin, when we talked about the same with line work, talks us into everything. Only good reasons though, you know. he was like, kind of sat me down and was like, hey, bro, I understand. And he knew by this point I could play football, right? When they told me I couldn't play football, it kind of put a sour taste in my mouth, but I still wanted to. But he had that talk with me where it was like, hey, listen, you know, you're about to be old enough to play football. You're a big kid. Most people, he just kind of broke it down statistically as far as how many people make it to college by playing baseball and how many people make it to college by playing football. And I knew then I had to find a way out, right? Like we didn't live with nice houses. And growing up, when you see nice houses and nice things, that's all you want. Fast forward, you don't need any of that stuff, but that's all you want, you know?
Right.
So I wanted that, and that seemed like my way out. So I decided he was right. We're going into football. And seventh grade did that for me.
Okay, so seventh grade, first time you're like allowed to play football with other kids.
Ever.
It's like your first team.
Yeah.
So what was that like for you? Like, great experience, horrible? Were you fantastic? Did you suck?
I was scared as shit. I was scared to death. I'd never really hit somebody in my life. I was scared. And I was always big. And our family is huge. And we love each other to death. But a big part of our family is picking on each other. And I had a real light voice back then for a big dude. I wasn't no scary individual. You know, I was big. I was just more round than anything. So I was scared to death to hit anything or do anything. Like, and, you know, I couldn't beat my way out of a wet paper bag at that age, bro. I wouldn't mean to nothing. I'd cry if a fly died and shit. Like, it was a different time, you know?
I mean, to preface this for everybody listening, he is like 6'7". He's a big boy now. Yeah. Were you like fucking 5'11" back then? You know, I was basically a grown man.
So my seventh grade year, I was actually 6'4".
Yeah.
I was 5'7" my sixth grade year. And that summer, I had grown fast. Probably not the best because of what happened after football. But I did turn big quick, baby. And remember, like, I've been picked on my whole life. And I was a normal-sized kid until sixth grade. Nobody knew that I was going to be that gigantic, right? They just thought I was going to be a little chunky kid. And then I just spurted straight up. So now I turn into this tower, but still in my heart, right, I've got this like, oh, man, I don't know. I'm just a little guy, da-da-da. And the first drill we ever did was the Oklahoma drill, and it changed my life. And Oklahoma drill, for people who don't know, what you do is you lay on your back, helmet to helmet, right? So you lay on your back, and there's a ball in the middle, and you flip over. The first one to grab the ball tries to get past a set of cones, and the one who doesn't have the ball has to stop him, offense and defense. This was like the best player on the team, and I was going against him. And because of my size, I think they all just thought, like, he's going to be great. That's not what I thought, but I did it. And I knew at that point I had fought my brother enough, and, you know, he's 9 years older than me, and whole family full of people who bully you around and play with you rough. So it was that instant and that moment that I decided I'm going to take it just like that, and I popped that kid pretty good and felt good, and everybody started cheering. And then I realized, like, I had a lot of aggression in me in that instance when I thought I was going to get hurt that I let out. And I found a way to have that, oh, I'm big and bad now. So football, after the first contact, at first it was horrible. I was scared to death. But after the very first putting on those pads and running into somebody was like, oh, man, this is what I was meant for.
Yeah, it's my stuff right here. I can do this.
Yeah.
All right, so played middle school. Obviously played high school, right?
Yeah, played high school.
All right, so kind of walk me through, how many years would you have been playing? Because you did skip a grade. You skipped eighth, right?
Yeah, but I played eighth. So I skipped eighth grade, but I played eighth grade in high school. I never got to play my ninth grade year.
Okay, but you went from, you played eighth and then jumped straight into varsity though, right?
Jump straight into varsity.
Right, and so you never had a JV.
And I'll break that down. Like I said, after that first contact, I got really comfortable, really fast. We'll go back to middle school for a second. I was in eighth grade, and it was the same coaches both years. So seventh grade year, I was coming alive. By the end of seventh grade year, it was funny. My mom and everybody who would come to watch is like, on the speaker when you're listening, it's like, number 75, Laith Harlow on the tackle. That's what it sounds like. Right, making the tackle.
Announcer or whatever.
They said every single game, the commentator, all you heard the whole game was my name. And so I'm not thinking about it. I can't hear it. You're in a zone when you're out there. Clearly, I'm getting better and other people are noticing. I'm just still trying to learn how to play the game. I don't know anything. It's my first year. So a coach, my eighth grade year, one of the coaches, we had to do a whole bunch of sprints. We got in a lot of trouble. And he said, if Laith can stop me from getting to the quarterback, then we don't have to run drills today. All the coaches, pretty sure, were on the same page that they were definitely running drills. We were just going to have to make some examples out of people. And I didn't know. I was just next man up mentality. So, you know, at that point, I'm getting a little confidence, of course. And I was like, okay, what's up, dude? So he puts on the pads. This grown man puts on helmet and pads to go against me. It was lucky. I'm not going to sit here and act like I out-manhandled a man as a damn, you know, little kid. But right. He came around the edge, and I'm a little stronger than he probably thought for that age. And it was wet, and he slipped. And when he slipped, everybody on the team knew that we didn't have to do all this damn physical training that he was about to put us through. And it went nuts. And that, I think, really, like, that's when the lights turned on for me. Even though it was an accident, in that moment as a kid, I knew I could beat everybody. And, like, it's kind of a bad way to think about it, but, you know, the confidence level of it was amazing. So, yeah, I went straight into varsity. And because of how I grew up in my initial couple years of football, they stick me straight into, like I said, I didn't get to play ninth grade, but I skipped a year. So basically we're training for sophomore season now, training for the next season coming up. So I've got all of spring and summer to get ready with these boys. And day one, I'm in the weight room with the biggest seniors who are already going to colleges. And a lot of people, I think, in that moment would be scared, but just because of the life instances that I've went through, thankfully, I accepted the challenge with open arms, kind of like a, oh yeah, and then what, you know, mentality. And Right. Got to work, man, had stretch marks on my arms in 3 months that I'd never seen before. It looked nasty, but I'd gotten huge, probably a little too huge. Yeah.
No, man, that's crazy. I'll be honest with you. I'm not huge into sports, but I can't imagine doing anything, you know, coming into it for a year or two and then be like, all right, now you're playing with the big boys. We're like, I don't know about this, man. I still got a lot to learn, you know?
It was scary. And I'll be honest, that was the first time that it was kind of like you're welcome to big boy league. All that confidence, all that things that you have been, like I said, at the time in eighth grade when that guy fell, in my mind, I did that. You know, looking back, he probably slipped. But, right, but yeah. I had the confidence. So
no, in your mind, though, he's like,
exactly.
Hot pancake, that's damn right. Coach.
That's right.
You know, but this is basically my team now.
This,
you know,
is my team.
Yeah,
team. I'm the captain now.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I never treated coaches like that whatsoever. I wanted to learn from everybody because I knew I had a lot to learn. People were so far ahead of me. I knew that I was always playing catch up because I only had a couple years in. I just learned really quickly, thank God. Anyway, so it was an introduction. It was a real hard year for me, my sophomore year. The team that I was on, I wasn't producing at the level that I knew I could. I didn't have the same confidence. First time in my life, coach screamed at me to stop pussyfooting around. I didn't even know what that had meant. And I realized quickly that he meant like you're just going with the flow. You're not trying to make a play. You're not trying to be better. You're just going with the flow. And I realized he was right. And that started, that was the tick that started to change me right there. And that same year when he told me that, we had a scrimmage game, my first ever varsity scrimmage game. And there was a kid, I love him to death. He's on my highlight too. I did this to him a couple times. This was just the first time I did it to him at a scrimmage. You know who the hell you are, dog. I caught a ball and he was coming at me and I looked him square in his shit, dog, and bah, with everything I had. And I mean, like a bug, I watched him just arms wide open, hit the damn ground, dude. And it once again, you know, I'd already know what this feeling was, but it felt good. And I went in for the touchdown. And after the game, the parents came up to me, not the coaches, the parents came up to me and said, you're a D1 college athlete. And after taking so many beatings, getting into high school, thinking I might not be able to do this, I had that boost of confidence. So the season goes on. It's a rough season. And I go to a camp right after that season. And when I went to that camp, I had got screamed at. Now, I went to the camp because I was trying to get noticed.
So when you went to the camp, that was after your sophomore season, right?
That was after my sophomore season. Okay. Yes. Coming into my sophomore season is when I'd heard, like, hey, you're a D1 athlete. We saw how you ran that play. And then fast forward, sophomore season is a very rough season. So I'm mentally thinking something is not right here. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
And now I'll break the story down. So I go to this camp and I did all right. I didn't do great. There's a bunch of studs out there. Then here's when you realize, like, okay, this is where the best of the best are. I need to be out here more if I want to be like these guys. Because you're getting trained by either NFL coaches or ex-NFL coaches. Like, these guys are out here to make talent, the elite of the elite. And I got back, and I got cussed out like a dog for going to that camp. He was an old-school coach. I love him to death. He taught me a lot. He made me strong. He made me a great guy. But when he said that you don't go out looking for recruiting, I get you recruited. I didn't like that. that didn't sit right with me. Why am I not allowed to get as many opportunities as I can get too?
Right, it's my future.
My future. I'm not saying that you're not going to help me. I'm just saying I can also help myself. But his mentality was kind of, that's not your job. And he's right about that. But luckily, I had a coach, my very first offer from Louisville, Ron Dugans, a great man, love him to death, ex-NFL player, wide receiver, just a great guy. Came to my school at Rickards and told me that I had an offer from the University of Louisville. Said, hey, man, I know you'll probably end up going somewhere else, but from me to you, man, you've got an offer from the University of Louisville. And I don't think he knew that I wasn't recruited at all at this time. So
it's like you didn't even talk to a recruiter at this point. Like
never.
It's not even in your mind. They're like, hey, you know.
It's in my mind that I can make it to a college. It's not in my mind yet that another college knows about me yet.
So, like, I'm not familiar with it. Like, you can be recruited. Well, you're like a 10th grade at this time, right? Mm-hmm. So you can be recruited all the way back. For as early as 10th grade? Man, or is that like uncommon or is that a common thing?
Well, it's uncommon as a whole because you got to think about how much talent there is in the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
But for the people who are getting recruited, it's very common. Okay. As a matter of fact, when I went into 11th grade and I thought I was hot stuff with all the offers I had, when I went into 11th grade, I had switched schools and we're about to get into that. But a kid came in from 9th grade who had already had about 10 offers that he had gotten in 8th grade. And Jesus, I mean Alabama, LSU, Florida State, Florida, all of the best teams. These ain't just like, it wasn't like D2 schools, or not saying anything against those schools either because we need all of them, you know.
Well, they're like the top programs in the country.
These are the top programs in the country that are offering 8th graders. So yeah, you can get recruited whenever. Back then there was no money or anything like that, so they're not offering you anything but the chance to come and play for their school if you so choose, which is not illegal, right? It's illegal to go to call them and go, hey, don't go there, come here, I'll give you this much. That's all illegal. But just them sending you a letter going, hey, we like you, we love you, we're offering you, da-da-da. And there's probably certain times in which they could do that, but clearly was that time, and he said, you have an offer from the University of Louisville. And I said, well, from me to you, you're my first offer. And he looked around and said, if I'm your first offer, something's not right, and it's not you. And I said, yes, sir. And how the world works, I started looking other places. We were moving out towards where I was going to be zoned for a different school. So I went to the school, and I talked to the coach there, and I fell in love with the coach. To let him know that I was coming. Nobody else knew, but I wanted him to know and who I was so that he wasn't like, who the hell is this guy when I get on campus? And we got to talking, and like I told you, I was big, a little too big. I was a tight end, and that's what I like to do. I like to run around, catch the ball. I'm fast. I like to block people too. I want to put somebody on their back, but I want to catch that ball and run somebody over as well. And my other coach told me, eat more. I was like, I swear I need to be skinnier. Coach, you think I need to lose some weight? No, you were nowhere near big enough. Eat more. My McDonald's order every day while I was at my first school, every day, was 3 double cheeseburgers, 2 10-piece nuggets, a large fry, sweet tea, and 2 apple pies. And the whole meal was about $20, and I'd have that every single day because I was supposed to get bigger. I didn't know how I needed to get bigger. So I went and talked to him, and he's like, we want you about 100 pounds less. And I said, you know what? I knew that, but that's not what I was told. And that's when I learned the term a glorified tackle. Now, a tackle is a different position, basically where you block for the quarterback. And that's a great position too, but I didn't want to be that position. You know, I don't think any kid does. They want to run around and catch, you know. So I knew I was coming in 3 months. He said, don't worry about it. He did a couple other really cool things during that meeting that made him stick out to me. Just know that I knew that I was in good hands.
This your boy.
This my boy. Right. God was putting me right where I needed to be. He knew Bobby Bowden on a first name basis type deal and a whole bunch of other coaches. Right. So I knew I was going where I needed to be going. And he said, don't worry about losing any of the weight. When you come back in 3 months, we'll get you there. We've got the whole season to get you ready. And I said, yes, sir. And I knew when I left, that was the one and only time that I would ever lie to that man because I was not being honest with him. I told him that I'd wait for him to lose that weight. But I knew in my heart, my first goal to note for him to know how serious I was about this was to be war ready in physical shape like that by the time I walked back in those doors.
Right.
And 3 months later, and I don't recommend this to anybody, but for 90 days, I had a Special K bar at 6 a.m. when I woke up. At lunchtime, I would have a half a turkey wheat sub from Subway and water. And I did that for 90 days, and I worked out 3 to 5 times a day. It sounds crazy and impossible, but I did it several times since. But that was the very first time I'd ever did it. And when I walked back in those doors 3 months later, he did not know who I was at first until I told him. He said, "I'm ready." And he said, "Yeah, you are." And 6 months later, I don't even think I had played 4 or 5 games yet. My junior year, I had 37 major D1 offers.
I mean, that's crazy, man. 37 offers. So walk me through the thought process behind your offers and all. I mean, 37, that's a lot of schools.
A lot. And I think there were more that ended up coming along. That's just what I remember. The process was crazy. It was wild. Like, we had mailboxes in the coach's office, okay? And how it worked was, like, you walk into the weight room. Behind the weight room was the coach's office. And inside of his office, we had a box with mail for it. And basically all the recruits, usually juniors and seniors, would have their name in the mailbox so that when mail came in, you would be able to see the schools, but directed at you, Lathe Harlow. Man, we'll put it on camera one day. We just went through it. I've got a box, and I mean a box full of these letters from every college you can think of: Tennessee, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Florida State, Florida, Miami, name it, USC, UCLA. All glory to God, man. I mean, I was really, really big, so my size helped a lot. I was 4 years into playing, so I really didn't know what was going on, but I had a natural ability, and I could show it off on the football field.
Absolutely. So you ended up settling on one, or not settle, you picked one.
I picked one.
Right, you picked one. You didn't settle for nothing. Obviously, you have 37 offers.
Number one in the country, baby. Yeah, Boomer!
Yeah. Okay, so Oklahoma.
Oklahoma Sooners.
That's where you went.
That's right. Not no Oklahoma State Cowboys. Don't y'all get it twisted, baby. Boomer Sooner, baby. Crimson and cream till I die. Yes, sir.
All right, so Oklahoma, you graduated high school. You heading out there?
Absolutely.
What's starting out over there? Well, I guess you should back up a little bit.
I should back up, and I should get deep as much as I don't want to. So I'm getting recruited heavily, highly. Things are going great. I'm taking official visits. I'm taking unofficial visits. I'm going to all of these schools all around the country. My brother's working in California as a lineman, so I'm flying out to Cali to see these schools. He moves to Colorado as a lineman, so I fly out to Colorado, and he drives me up. We ride up to Oregon together after we snowboard for 3 days in the mountains in Colorado. We ride up to Oregon to get recruited by them and see what their schools are like. And I mean, it's amazing. It is mind-blowing. It is unfathomable. Unless you're in that position, in that scenario, it doesn't feel real. That's what I felt like at all times, whether that was true or not. And I treated it that way too. I was very serious about everything I did. I was professional. This didn't come by accident. This came with more hard work than the human brain can probably comprehend. For somebody that age, I worked as hard as I possibly could. So all of those things happen. And one day, it's my junior year, I've already committed, and I go up for a catch. I don't think we're even in the middle of the season, but I go up for a catch, and I get hit, and I get a stinger, right? I've never had a stinger before, but stinger is common in football. So I go up to my trainer, and I say, "I've got a stinger." And she says, "Which shoulder?" And I told her both. And she said, "No." You said, "What?" And I said, "Both. Like, I'm getting annoyed. I want to get this fixed so I can get back out here." She says, "Go to the hospital." So they rushed me to a neurosurgeon, and I got x-rays. And after I had the x-rays, I'm sitting in a room with this doctor. And this doctor looks at me in my face and says, "I've never had to tell another blue-collar athlete this in my life. But if I were you, I'd stop playing football." And I told him, "Am I hurt?" He said, "No." I said, "Okay. Can you keep me from playing football?" He said, "No." I said, "Then I don't want to know any fucking thing else. Thanks. Bye." And I left. And that scared me because I knew something was going to happen. I just didn't know when.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, you know, you get your injury. It doesn't take you out the game, you know, at this time. But it's in your mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's eating me up that it's going to happen. It's in the back of my mind at all times. It's not a real thing yet, but to me, I guess it already is. That's why they say manifestation is a real thing. So you can manifest for good and you can manifest for bad, right? And it was bound to happen as part of what it is, but it might have happened a lot sooner just because I was so worried about it. I started doing things that I didn't do before, too. I was 100% dead set, like this was my life. And then I started to worry that maybe it can't be. You know, so as much as I'm still trying to make it my life, I'm doing stupid shit that I shouldn't be. I'm smoking with my friends instead of taking my health as serious as I have been for these past 5 years. I'm not really taking the football too serious. I am. Like, you can't, nobody else can tell, but mentally I know, right? And once again, nobody knows. It might not be a real thing. I'm just, to me, I'm making this up in my head, but I can see it's affecting my life. And we got a senior season, and senior season, everything's going good. I've kind of got that monkey off my back. Now I'm in the middle of the season. What I mean by that monkey off my back is, like, I'm not thinking about it every day anymore. Like, oh, I might get hurt.
Right. Some time's passed. You're playing.
This is 6 months has passed now. I'm completely fine. I don't know what anybody's talking about no more. It's kind of gone. I'm in the middle of the season. We're just prepping and running and prepping and running, and I'm having a great time. Well, it's a Wednesday, and Wednesday are called shell days. In high school football, games are played on Friday. So how it works is Monday, Tuesdays, you're in full pads, right? So you're completely covered head to toe. Everybody's knocking each other's asses out. Hard as you can run, run, right?
Yeah, full speed.
Wednesday is not that. Wednesday, we are still going through everything, but we're dialed in now. It's midway through the week. It's 2 days until game day. Now we're not trying to hurt anybody. We're not trying to go full speed. We are just making sure we are completely on the same page and one unit as a team. So we're going through our playbook. I go up for a routine pass across the middle. A linebacker checks me, and a check is just basically you just throw your arm at the guy, throw it into my back, you know, let me know I'm there. Nothing wrong, perfect. But I land, and when I land, my leg goes numb. I felt it. It was weird, and I was like, I don't like that. My coaches have known about the stinger. So they were a little cautious with me. So, like, when anything would happen, when I just wouldn't feel all right, and you're a senior, so they don't want their guys hurt. And no matter what, when you're a senior and you go ask somebody, hey, man, my shoulder feels a little, go sit down. You don't have to. You a captain. We know you can do this. So I sat out. You know, like I told you, that night I was a little scared because it didn't feel right. The next day is walkthroughs, right? So this is the day before the game. And I smoked a little weed, like I told you, because now I'm starting to go back into this mentality of, oh, shit, what's happening? So Friday, that walkthrough goes, and everything feels perfectly fine to me, maybe because I'm under the influence and not paying as much attention, but I don't feel the pain in my back. So It is what it is. Friday is game day. Friday, how games work when you go for a game out of town. You go to dinner, you stop at a rest area, and then you go straight to the field where you're going to play at, and you ready and you go.
On the bus, right?
On the bus. All on the bus. Yeah. We ain't college yet. We ain't taking no flight. Right, you know what I'm saying? Right. And I don't know how many people are stopping to fly when or stopping when they're flying to eat and then to go to the bathroom. I need to play for that team though. Yes, bus, I'm sorry. I just think everybody knows about football. So we stop for dinner, everything's cool, but my back's hurting. And then we stop for rest area. My back's really hurting. So like trying to walk it off is not helping. So I'm like, I'm going to go to the bus while nobody else is on the bus, and I'm going to sit down. And I go to take my first step up onto that bus, and I fell down. Looked around, nobody saw me, sprinted up to that bus. And I knew something was really wrong right then. So I sit in the corner. I'm not saying nothing. Nobody's tears streaming down my face. By the way, just a little side note, my senior season, I'm having the season of my life. Like, I thought I was good my junior season, but my senior, even coaches who already know I was committed were like, man, you're a different guy now. You know, like I said, I'd only been playing for a couple of years, so things are just starting to click more and more and more and more. Anyways, I go get on this bus, tears streaming down my face, everybody gets on, we roll to the field, and I'm not going to say anything to nobody because I don't know what's going to happen now, but I know that I have 60 minutes to play this game, and I'm here, so I'm going to play.
Right, you want to get benched.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm not telling nobody I'm hurt right before the game starts. Nah. If I die out there in that field, you'll know I'm hurt. Other than that, won't a word be said during this game. So I did go to my trainer. I said, hey, I'm a little tight this game, you know, bouncing around, feeling like I'm about to die, but to her, just looking normal as I can be. Can I get a couple of Tylenol? Yeah, sure. So she throws me a couple of Tylenol, and it eases the pain a little bit. Halftime, same exact thing. Come back in, stretch me out as much as you can, please. Back's a little tight. More Tylenol, boom, go back out to the game. Great game. 10 catches. There was one play I dropped a damn pass I'll never forget. It was the last game that I got to actually play, you know what I mean?
This last game of senior season?
Yeah. No. This is only my fifth game of my senior season. This is my last game I ever got to play in my life.
Oh, okay.
The game that I'm talking about was my last game. My last official game, yeah. So there's that one pass that I dropped. But other than that, I've got like a, I don't know, 60, 70 yards. I don't know exactly how many during the game. But it was a good game. After the game, I did tell my trainer I knew I couldn't hold it anymore because of how bad it was getting. Just so you know, when I went to get on the bus before I fell down, something was wrong with my leg. Coming from my back is what it feels like. I don't know. But I wasn't ever going to tell you until I got to play this. She was very upset with me. But she understood and made me go to the doctor. Following Monday, it was a Friday when we were heading home. So I went to the doctor. Doctor told me I had what's called drop foot. Drop foot, essentially, I'd been hit and a piece of my vertebrae had broke off and it was pinching on a nerve going down my left leg. And what that does is stops blood flow to the leg and makes it where if you don't sit down so that the blood flow can come back, you're going to fall. So I had the surgery. Surgery goes great. Physical treatment, everything's like moving along. And now I'm feeling better than ever. Now I'm back to feeling better than I was before my senior season of high school. Like, I haven't felt my back feel this good. So Oklahoma knows about the surgery. Obviously, you talked to me about the surgery. Everything seems good. Coaches are like, you seem good. You this, you that. Like, get out here. Let's get this thing going. So we get out there. We're practicing. And then I have to go for a CAT scan. And I'm not thinking anything about it.
It's at Oklahoma, right?
This is at the University of Oklahoma. Absolutely. And I'm not thinking anything about it. I go for a CAT scan. I think everything's going to be cool. And I don't hear anything for like a day. And that's weird for me, you know, because usually I'm at the facilities. I know what's going on. But I don't usually talk to the doctors, just the trainers, you know. So I don't know if they're processed a little longer, but I'm still getting nervous. And then I get a call to come in. I'm like, finally, here we go. I'm back. I'm coming back. All of this is a facade. All these doctors have been lying. Now I get to go to work. This is what I'm meant for. You know, here we go. And I come back into that room, and the doctor says to me, I know you don't want to hear this, but if you were my son, I'd say you can never play the game of college football again. We looked at your back. We thought your back was better. It's actually way worse than anybody has ever told you it is. And I was like, no. That's the first time I'd ever heard that I was 19 with the back of an 85-year-old man, statistically, just how my back was. And probably some very brutal hits from football. Also, growing up, I was very rough on myself. I've got more stitches everywhere than you can imagine. But it's also hereditary. There was nothing I could do about it. But at that time, I just thought he was saying that if you were my son, I would say no. And to that, I was a little bit smartassious, which I probably shouldn't have been. But I told him, no disrespect, but if you were my dad, then I would have a dad, and my dad would be a doctor. How it sits, I have no father whatsoever. And my mom lives in a trailer. So give me a dotted line to sign on. Anything you want. I don't care. I'll pay for my own medical expenses if something happens. Let me go play football. And they said no. And I said, okay. Well, I've got other schools talking to me. I named a couple of schools to them so that they knew I was serious and showed them so that they knew that people were still in my DMs going, if that don't work out, I know this will over here. Come see me, which is illegal.
Right.
By this point, you're not allowed to do that. But I wanted them to know, put you on high alert. I will leave this motherfucker. I am playing football, though. Let me go now. And he kind of laughed at me. It was a chuckle. I instant chills down my spine. In a situation that serious, when somebody laughs, it is eerie,
right, right,
to say the least. And he said, you think I'm an Oklahoma doctor? I'm an NCAA doctor. I am the doctor for every single major college in America, me and my team. And you will never play another down for the NCAA. And it shook me to my core right then. But he broke it down for me. He said, let me tell you something. You can change your name. You can go through all these elaborate, you'd have to lie and create school grades that you really don't have, transcripts, and you could do all of that. And you could go to a college, Leith. You know you can play college ball anywhere. You know you can start, and you know you can go to the NFL. So let's say you go, and I don't catch you, and you're huge, and you're going to be D1, and now you're about to get drafted. Do you think the NFL doesn't know the size of your dick before they give you a $20 million sign-on bonus? And I was like, that man ain't never been more right. Who in their right mind is going to give you a dollar to come play for their team unless they have done a full medical examination on you? It doesn't make sense. So that dream stopped there.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't imagine. You know, I mean, I remember you back in those days. That was your life. Everything's football this. And, you know, if we ain't talking about football, we ain't talking. You know, is it that or you working out or you're doing this or doing that? I mean, that was your life. So, I mean, I couldn't imagine what you're going through at that time to take basically, you know, your life away.
100%. And that, man, that's what it felt like. I went down a really, really deep, dark path after that. Drugs, lying to everybody that I knew, stealing, selling everything that I could, whether it was mine or not, hurting people that I loved. It was rough, man. I don't think a lot of people make it back from that. They wanted me to stay, honored me a medical, which, you know, thank God for them. You know, I'd love to stay there. Hindsight's 20/20. I probably should have stayed there, you know. Stayed in coaching because I love coaching and playing around with the kids and, you know, just teaching the next generation football and everything. But at that time, I was jealous. I was not only jealous of my talent not being able to be used, but jealous that next man still could play even though I felt like I had more ability than him.
Yeah.
So there was no way I was going to sit there and be a coach for somebody who was taking my position, right? And that was the hard-headedness in me. And then number two, what I went to school for, I took football very seriously, but I took school very seriously too because I knew that they went hand in hand. And I also knew that I wanted to go for journalism, which was another reason I picked Oklahoma. They were a great school for journalism. And I went there, but I wanted to be a journalist like on ESPN or NFL Network. And as a kid, when you can't play your first down in college football ever, you don't ever think you're going to have the credibility to be a Kirk Herbstreit or Chris Fowler or Desmond Howard or, you know, any of these wonderful guys, Lee Corso, and sit up here and talk to them because you haven't played. Even though I have, and I know a lot about the game, I'm not going to say as much as them because they've been in it so long, I love the game with all of my heart. You don't believe as a child that they're going to accept you as one of them in that moment because you ain't been where they've been.
I feel like you ain't got no credibility.
Yeah, so I left. I literally partied till they kicked me out. As soon as that doctor said, you'll never play again, my motive in life was to just, I don't know, hurt as many people as I can that I feel like hurt me until I die. Like, really, I stopped believing in everything in that moment. I told myself, if God was real, who I believed in my whole life, he would have never let me go through that. I would have never been put in that situation. Like I said, it was dark, man. It was not a good time. I was trying to either be put in a casket or put in prison.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that anybody that can sit up here and be like, oh, man, you know, da, 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 da. I would have done it differently. You know, you weren't in that situation, for one. For two, I mean, that'd be hard on anybody, any aspect in life. Yeah. Anything you've worked towards your whole life and then it got taken away from you, I mean, it's hard on anybody. So walk me through more like your professional. So football's over. You know, football's that's not
over.
An option.
Football's over. And I will say I'm still a piece of shit, but not in that way anymore. We will fast forward. I found God again. I went through such a deep, dark time and did so much things that I shouldn't have done that I found out that he'd been saving me all along from myself. These things in life, it just means you're meant for something else. And I figured that out right after that. I came back home, and if I wouldn't have ever got hurt, I would have never met my wife, who I met when I came back home. And she provided me with two of the most beautiful babies in this entire world who I look up to. Just like I told you, I grew up without a father, didn't have one. So I knew if I ever had the opportunity and God gave me one of his kids to be able to take care of, I'd treat it as such. You know what I mean? And am I perfect to my kids? By no means. But I definitely strive every day. And I know one thing, I'm here for them. And that's a lot different than I had growing up. So like I said, I found her. I started getting on the straight and narrow. I'd also gotten into a fight, gotten arrested, and I had to do some probation. So that got me off of everything. I was already going that way, and just that final thing got me away from all of my old friends and things like that because I knew I had to be somebody different if I was going to complete probation and not violate or go back to jail or any of these things that I decided I was not going to be that guy anymore. I remembered who I was in high school when I had those lofty goals to be that football player. It is the same person. It is just not the same goal. And once I figured that out, things started to take off. So the first thing that I got in, like all of us, I called my brother. I said, hey, dude, this ain't what I'm doing anymore. They told me I couldn't play football, and I'm not staying here in school. What's next? And he said line work. And before I left the University of Oklahoma, I applied for CELCAT, SoCat is Southeastern Line Constructions, Apprenticeship and Training. We done talked about some line work, so we ain't got to talk about it for a million hours this time. But they, when that doctor told me I was 19 with the back of an 85-year-old man, my middle fingers were up when I thought about climbing 120-foot poles every day. You know, back in those days, I didn't have a car because my mom had flown me out there and I was dating a girl. I just was not the relationship type. And I told her I was leaving. I didn't know how I was getting there. And an hour later, she came and knocked on my door. I opened the door and she said, "My car's backed up to your dorm. All we got to do is pack all your stuff and I'll drive you to Tallahassee." And that was probably 9 o'clock that night. I'd already applied for SoCat. I just got that done. I knew I wasn't staying anymore. I didn't know how long I was staying. But when she said, "We can leave whenever," I packed my stuff up. I called all of my friends right then. We all got together, said our goodbyes, hung out for a couple of hours, long hugs. About 2 a.m., I pulled out of Norman, Oklahoma, due east, back to Tallahassee to get this thing popping, man. And that's when everything happened. We partied a lot when she got here for about a week, but her family was like, "What the hell is wrong with you? This wild-ass kid just made you up and leave and go to Florida." And so she headed back home, and after she headed back home, I found line work, and like I said, that's when I started to become better, and a year later, I found my wife, and everything after that moment changed, man. I started taking line work very seriously. When I first got into line work, I did not take it as serious as I should. I was still coming down from that bad person. Like I said, this wasn't an overnight thing.
Right. You was working on yourself. You still had some, still had a little bit of issues, but
I'd say a lot of it issues, you right. know. But I was getting through it, and I got my first job on the line crew, and I had never made any money in my life because I was a college football player, and I didn't have to pay for anything. My family told me, as long as you can go to college and not us have to pay for your college, we will get you through college. So between getting stipends from football, which wasn't much back then, to, you know, my family supporting me, I didn't have to pay for anything. So I didn't really know what big money was like. And I came back home. I'm waiting for a job to go with the line crew. So my first job, I'm building fences. And we would pretty much drink all day while we're building these fences. And so it worked for my lifestyle because at that point I was still not in a great place. And then I get the call for line work, and I'm probably making $400 a week. I'm not doing real good, but I'm having fun. 7-10s. I was working what's called the JQ line, and that is from Jasper to Quincy. Transmission, my first job. 125-foot poles.
Just right like by the house.
Right by the house, just like I talked.
Yeah, like that lucked out right there.
Yes, it was. Very lucky. Yeah. Very, very lucky. I get into this line of work. My very first week, I make $2,500. My very first week, and I'm freaking out. And my brother says, "That shouldn't be all." And I was like, "What?" And I realized there was a check behind that check with $700 more. I'd made $3,200 on regular work for a week. I didn't see the per diem check behind it.
Well, you say regular work, but that's regular to Powerline industry. That's not regular to most people.
I mean, yeah. I guess what I mean by regular work is not storm work like me and you talked about you doing. Sorry. Yeah,
this is like a normal, like, you're here until the job gets done kind of thing.
Absolutely.
But
this is the office person's 9 to 5, right?
Right. But this is 7 days a week, 10 hours a day. I mean, this is rough work every day.
Rough work. Never drove I had driven a stick shift before, but only once, and it was about 5 years before that. And I was told the one thing that you never want to do is act like you don't know what you're doing. So we're setting a pole. We had to back this rock up to the truck so that we could dump the rock in the pole. So that what's called tamp the pole, or make sure that it stays in the ground. It doesn't move. So they're like, "You know how to drive a stick."
Mm-hmm.
I knew I was lying, but yeah, I wasn't going to tell him I didn't.
Yes, sir.
He goes,
"Absolutely."
That's exactly right. So he goes, "All right, cool. Go over there, hop in that truck, back it up to that pole, and then dump that rock. Got you guys backing you up right there." "Yes, sir." So I went in and could not get this thing to go into gear. Finally, when I did it, die. So now they're all walking towards me, all the foremen, the GF, and I'm like looking at them knowing if they get to my window, I am in trouble. And finally, I just let it out, dude. I slam on the gas. I let my whole foot off the clutch, and whoom, I fly back there, dude. And by the time I let go, like, I'm probably 40 foot from this pole. Right. So I'm having to use both feet to slam on the brakes, and I probably came about 8 inches from the pole. And they were like, yo, what the hell was that? And I said, I need to pull up some. Like I was meant to be there. So it was great. It was absolutely amazing. Got along with all the guys, man. It was a bunch of fun. But like I said, I didn't take it seriously. I got that first check. And my first thing that I did with that first check was I used to love this club. It's no longer open, so I'll shout them out here in Tallahassee, Florida. It was called Coliseum. And I would go there like every weekend, bro. And I went there after I got that check. That night, I had to work the next day. Didn't matter. Stayed up all night. And I took, I don't know how, I think it was just $200 in dollar bills. And I walked into the middle of the dance floor. And Coliseum back in those days was wall to wall. You could not move so many people. And I threw all that money up in the air. And I watched people run around for it like rats. And I thought, I could get used to this. Yeah. This is how all them superstars do it, man. So, you know, I loved it to death. But same thing as you said, right? One is that family aspect that is hard. And two, they told me I had the back of an 85-year-old man when I was 18, and I was hard-headed and didn't listen. And about a decade after doing line work, maybe a little less, I found out they were right. Yeah. I do have a bad back. So I would be at work for a year and everything be fine. I'd be laid out with an injury for 6 months. And now my kids are starting to notice I'm home all the time, and then I leave and they're freaking out. They don't know what's happening. So I'm ruining the dynamic of my work, because it's like riding a bike. You get out there and you don't feel as confident for a few weeks to a few months. Now you're worried about injuries. Are they going to happen? And then I'm also ruining the dynamic between my family home, because now they're used to daddy being home, and now daddy's gone, and now daddy's home. And now versus just when you're on the road, you're on the road. And that's tough, but you get used to the road life. The back and forth is what makes it almost impossible. That's the killer, man. That's the killer.
I could see it out. You know, traditionally in line of work, it's probably like 2 weeks off for Christmas. You get Christmas week and the week of New Year's or whatever, and that's kind of the general. You know, everybody kind of does that. It's standard practice, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I could be gone all year, be fine. You know, I come home a weekend here and there whenever I needed to. But them 2 weeks, you're at the house every day, and then it's like, oh, shit, now I got to leave.
Now I got to leave.
I don't want to.
I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave. I can't tell you how many times I would convince my family to come with me to a hotel. They'd sit in a hotel all week.
Yeah.
But I needed them there. You know what I mean? Especially when I was gone and for so long, and then I'd be hurt and home for so long, and then I go to leave again and be like, nah, y'all come with me to make sure this hotel is safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not really, but just so that I had somebody there with me and the kids to know that, hey, daddy's here. I'm working, but I'm here. You know what I mean? Yeah, that was tough. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of money, but it was tough. And I hate it, but I ended up disliking the work because of what it was doing to me physically. And it's got nothing to do with the work. It was literally just my back. But at that time, I was no longer having fun. And I knew, once again, I was about to get something stripped away from me. But this time, it wasn't as bad. I had my family with me. I had grown, and I already went through football. And that was not going to be the same as this. So very quickly, we decided that I talked too much shit to not at least try sales. And thank God, I took off with it, man. Became very successful, I would say. I think I'm almost as natural at sales as I was at football. I won't say that I am, because that might have been my true talent. Who knows? But I would say it's a damn close second. I enjoy it. I get to meet new people every day. I get to help people buy everything. Mainly what I sell is vehicles. And I love that too, because everybody in sales, well, who buys cars, has this theory of like, car salesmen are the bad guys. But you don't have to be. And I took the approach of, you don't have to be. I would rather help the customer instead of make money. I realized that if I would just spend all of my energy and all of my concern taking care of the customer to the best of my ability, the money would fall in my pocket. And I couldn't have been more right about that theory.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. You know, you take care of the customer, and just take care of you.
100%. 100%. And that's the thing, man. And I didn't think of it as like, oh, I need something extra for this. I just thought of it like, man, if somebody's going to come and spend $100,000 on something, every car is not expensive, even if you spend five. But the person who spends $100, it's less expensive than the person that spends $5,000 on a car. And that's what people don't understand. Like, people are, oh, yo, well, it's only this much. Yeah, bro. But like, that's all that person has. And they're doing this on a leap of faith, hoping that this is going to make them more money. And when you actually care about that whole process just as much, it becomes all worth it. And I thought you can make a whole lot of money in line work, and there's no way you can make money like that anymore. And I couldn't have been more wrong. My back don't hurt at all anymore, but I make better money than I did when I did line work. And that's the truth.
And that's not going to be for everybody, of course.
No, of course, because everybody's not natural at salesmen. But, you know, at line work's not better for everybody either. Like, in life, in the beginning, just like we were talking about, I thought that the only way that you could, there was one way to do something, right? Like how our family, it was line work. And that was the one way to do it. And when I found out I made more money in sales than I ever did in line work, I thought, well, no, sales has got to be the way. Then I just realized is what you like the most. Like, if you fall in love with something, you could make a $1 billion doing it. It doesn't matter that it hasn't been made money in before. Think about this. Think about podcasting. Do you think people were ever going to think that they could just sit around and then bullshit and make billions and then Joe Rogan comes along? Yeah. Shout out.
I was hoping, you know.
Yeah.
I always been waiting for this job. Yeah. You know, that's my wife.
You only get one shot.
Yeah. I could sit at the house and talk shit all day. That's me right there. I could do that.
That's exactly right.
So, do you feel like that sums it up? Or you got anything else you want to tell the people?
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing I'd like to tell people, right, is like, I'm not done. You know, like, that is my story, right? But that is not where my story ends. I hope there's so much more to my story. And that's exactly why we're on here doing this right here. So that maybe one day our entire family can have these, even if not for, you know, us making money and being successful, it's still just a file of our lives that we get to keep and share as a family and community and keep this thing going, man. And just like, I have so much fun doing this. I'm glad we get this opportunity, and I hope more like this come about.
Nah, absolutely, man. I remember when we first started talking about this idea, it's like, man, I love hanging out with you. You know, you're probably one of the closest people in my life.
Yeah.
It's like, so you mean tell me we're just going to sit around and talk about stupid shit we've done in the past or whatever, you know?
All day?
Yeah, hell, that's a normal for Thursday. You know, yeah, okay,
exactly.
Cool. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly, man. And that's, you know, that's part of this podcast. I think that most podcasts will not be this deep. Clearly, this one had to be this deep so that y'all could understand who we are. Hey, man, there's a little soft side to everybody. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if you're 6'7" and 950 pounds or whatever I weigh. But yeah, most of it would be light. Most of it would be fun. But I mean, that's just a deep dive into who I am and who you are. And I you know, that's how I want to keep this thing, man. Keep it rolling, just like with the bullshit that we talk.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. If you're listening to this, I'm like, man, these guys are just Debbie Downers. Nah, that's not us. I mean, we do come from a little bit of hard times here and there, but we like to find the comedic relief in everything.
Absolutely. You know? Reliving your past when you're talking about it like that is hard, but poking fun at certain parts of your past are easy and hilarious, and that's what we focus on. We don't focus on it as a whole, because if you did, there are sad parts of it, but like, look where we are. I know one thing for sure. Heard something that said, if the younger you saw you, that kid would think you were rich. And when I thought about that, I was like, you're right. And I've been rich. I might have been rich with a whole lot of money, but I've been rich with more family, more friends, more good times than you can imagine. And I wouldn't trade that for every dollar in the world.
No, absolutely, man. I think a lot of people get too wrapped up in the materialistic.
I think so, too. And don't get me wrong, I like the nice shit, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I want to be bougie every now and then, too. Put me on a cruise, baby. Yeah. But at the end of the day, dude, this is exactly what it's about. So thank you guys so damn much for tuning into this episode. Hopefully there is a million more. Y'all like, comment, subscribe. If you have any questions, any concerns for me or Tristan, you can email Tristan at TristanHarlow@RelativeNonsense.com. You can email me at LathHarlow@RelativeNonsense.com. Or if you're trying to ask just a general question or something that we need to put in the podcast, send the question to SayWhat@RelativeNonsense.com, baby. Thank you, guys. Happy Tuesday and good night.